Hello everyone and welcome to Rad Chat, the multi-award-winning first therapeutic radiographer-led oncology podcast. Welcome to a bonus series in paid collaboration with Genesis Care, who are UK's leading independent specialist cancer care provider. So my name's Jo McNamara and I'm joined by fellow host Namanjog Anderson.
Hi everyone.
So a huge thank you to our last guest of the series, Richard Baker, who discussed radiotherapy engineering. If you haven't had a chance yet, please do go and take a listen. So I'm very excited to introduce our guest and longtime collaborator with RadChat, Sue Jensen van Rensburg, who will be discussing dosimetry and working at Genesis Care.
Thanks, Jo. I can't believe I'm finally getting to do this with you guys. You missed out RadChat super fan from the intro as well. So, you know.
Oh, bless you. Well, I've known you for a long time, Sue, haven't I? Because you were actually one of my students.
Yes. You were like my first tutor at university. You looked after us when we were radiographer babies. So, yeah, of course, that was only, you know, about 2 years ago, right? We were all still young, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the audience that don't know you, Sue, can you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and also about your career pathway to date?
So my name's Sue. I'm a therapeutic radiographer by background, and I trained up at Sheffield Hallam with Jo. But my job title now is I'm a senior dosimetrist, specialist planning with Genesis Care. And I was thinking about how I got into radiotherapy to start with. And as I was sort of wandering around thinking about it, I realised that my story is, there's a story that wasn't. And I think this is where I should have sort of made the leap into radiotherapy. But I missed the boat initially. Because my mum was, she had radiotherapy when I was 16. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. I remember it was after my GCSEs. So this was around the time I was starting my A-levels, prime time for university choices, etc. But I was completely oblivious, except for the fact that I remember she always spoke very fondly of the therapeutic radiographers looking after her and made a point of making sure at Christmas to go and get a box of Quality Street to go and give to them at the sort of Christmas time. She wasn't on treatment exactly then, but she went back to make sure to do it. And still, I was just completely blinkers and I didn't know who these people were or really what they were doing. So yeah, missed that boat there. And I went off to university originally studying criminal justice because I was in my Ally McBeal phase. But I realised after sort of the first semester that wasn't really the career path I wanted to go down. So I came back home, went back to work. I was working in IT at the time, and that comes back a bit later again. After a few years, I sort of thought, now's the time to move on and do something else. And I've always been really fascinated with medical stuff. And I was looking to see what I could do. And I came across radiography. And this is quite a familiar story that people just find it at some point and think, oh, I could do that. And that's exactly what happened to me. And I spoke with the local university, which was Kingston St. George's. And they were like, well, they sort of organised a couple of placements for me to go and visit a diagnostics department, but also a radiotherapy department. And shout out to Sarah Armstrong. I think she's still practising at the Royal Marsden. And she sort of, yeah, took me around and just showed me a little bit of everything. And I was trying to figure out if I knew then what dosimetry even was. I don't think I did, but I made notes that she showed me dosimetry and I found them. And I wrote something about how there were these people doing radiotherapy planning things, something like that. But even then, I didn't really twig what it was all about. I just fell in love with radiotherapy then and there, like combining all the techie stuff, being able to help people, and just all that medical bits and pieces where you could get involved. And yeah, it's just all really interesting. Even today I still enjoy sort of learning about what goes on inside the human body. So yeah, it combines it all for me. Became a therapeutic radiographer. I worked on treatment for a couple of years, and then I joined Genesis Care. But back then we were known as Cancer Partners UK. That was 10 years ago. And the thing that really drew me to CPUK at the time was where they were sort of doing images every day for patients on treatment to see how things were changing, if the bladder's a bit more full or less full, etc., and being able to act on that every day. And that's how I ended up becoming a sort of therapeutic radiographer with this company then. And from there, I've just kind of carried on doing a few different things along the way. I sort of started getting quite interested in the treatment planning. And even when I was working before that, you'd get a paper plan come through and you can, you just have like a, we call it a slice through a patient. It's like a picture of their plan. And I'd be just staring at it, trying to figure out what all the lines meant and things like that. But I had the opportunity to spend some time with our dosimetrist on site and learn what they were doing, just watching them really. And then I would just go away and sort of read by myself and play around and try and figure things out. And eventually started building my own competencies. And it's kind of same old story, really. And eventually there was a job that came up that I applied for and became a dosimetrist. So that's what I do now. Yeah.
It's interesting though to see how people get to where they've got to. I suppose if you had to explain dosimetry to a six-year-old, how would you explain it?
It's a tricky one. And when I sort of look up the word origin, I always do that as well, which is always really helpful. I did do Latin at school and I feel like that's probably why I'm doing it. But it's technically it's dose monitoring, and that won't really help too much with the six-year-old thing. But I like to think of it more as dose making. And there's a friend of mine who's, if he's listening, will be laughing as I say that because he finds it thoroughly entertaining. And it's about, yeah, making the dose for someone's radiotherapy treatment plan. We're kind of in the background and putting everything together. It's one of those unseen roles, I think. But yeah, it's about making the dose. You know, we work very closely with doctors who are deciding where the treatment's going, and physicists who double check our work, triple check our work. And it gets a bit complicated because sometimes physicists are doing the planning as well. So it is quite a broad job title because you can have people from very different backgrounds who do this role. But ultimately, we're all doing the same thing, treatment planning in radiotherapy.
Sue, can I ask, what training did you have to do to officially call yourself a dosimetrist? Because I know at many HEI institutions now, for those people who are studying therapeutic radiography or a BSc, a radiotherapy and oncology, we do include planning as part of the training and education. But for you to kind of officially have that title, what did you have to do?
For me as a therapeutic radiographer, essentially nothing. But just it's a job title for me because the therapeutic radiographer part is the protected title. That's, if you like, that's the hard part to get. But being a therapeutic radiographer in treatment planning, it is part of the sort of the role description in the sense of how it's recognised by the Healthcare Professions Council or even the Society of Radiographers. It's all part and parcel. But for other people coming in through different pathways, I think it probably is a different situation. So there's people that come through like a clinical technologist pathway, and in those situations they probably do have a different accreditation, if you like, to being able to do that. But beyond that, it's in terms of sort of having the role, we do have a very complicated competency framework, as we do across any of our healthcare professions. And it's about sort of, I jokingly say, see one, do one, teach one. It's a bit more than one, but it's a generalised approach. It's like, you know, you're observing, you start off, something's being demonstrated, then you're observing, and then you're being supervised yourself, having a go, and then you're sort of autonomously doing something. So it's going through that same competency process that many of us might be familiar with. So, yeah.
How long do plans take to do?
That's such a tricky question. I was sort of thinking about how to describe this, and actually one of my colleagues asked me earlier in the week as well, and I was like, well, it can be very quick or it can be very long. So it can be a couple of hours, it can be a few days plus, depending on what we're doing. And that's one of the hardest parts about it, in the sense of, you know, you've still got a deadline of when the patient's scheduled to start treatment, and you don't know how it's going to go until it's going, in some ways. And you don't know when something's going to be trickier than you maybe initially anticipated. And there's different factors at play, like how big an area that we're planning to treat. It's like we call it a dose grid around the patient. And so we're looking at everything within that grid to see what the radiation's doing. So it depends how big that grid needs to be. But also, you could be treating a very small area. So someone might have like the tiniest maybe tumour in their lung or something like that. But you actually need to think about what's happening to the whole lungs. And if you think how big your lungs actually are, it means that dose grid has to be really big. So that's a really woolly way of avoiding the question. I think that, yeah, it can be anything from a couple of hours to several days. Some of the more complex work we do in the stereotactic space, we have a lot of peer review going on as well. So they do peer review of the contours, and we have various different checks along the way through the planning process as well. So there's a few extra steps that get put in. And the reason why, when we're doing stereotactic plans, they're very high dose for less numbers of treatments, less fractions. So it's even more important that we get it right first time, because it's a big dose in one go, basically.
So can I ask, in terms of kind of your role at Genesis, what do you have to do when a patient comes through, goes for pre-treatment, has their CT scan? Do you then go get that CT scan and then straight away start planning? Or does the oncologist first start to contour around some of the organs at risk? Because I know different places do different kind of protocols, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So for us, for 99% of the time, the doctor is needing to draw something first. But we start first because we're drawing round what we call the organs at risk. That's a term that we use, OARs, quite a lot. And if, for example, we're treating a prostate patient, someone like me will pick up that scan and draw around everything that's nearby, like the bladder and the bowel. Some of the bones are very important as well, because there's blood cells that get created in there as well. We do that, and we send that off to the oncologist, who then draws around the prostate, etc., that they're wanting to treat. So then that then comes back, and then that's when we start the actual planning. And that's the bit where we get involved, and that's the bit that can sometimes take longer than we anticipated, or if there's delays earlier in the process as well. But all the while, you sort of think the clock's ticking, because the patient's got their schedule and, you know, they've got plans. So we do our very best to make sure that we do get things turned around. I said 99% of the time, that's what happens. And then that other 1%, sometimes we aren't drawing blobs as such, but we're kind of aiming the fields. And like, I might prepare a provisional treatment field if it's something urgent, to get the doctor to review that and say that they're happy with that field. So there's kind of two different approaches to planning. But most of what we do at Genesis now is that first one, where, yeah, we have a volume, we call it, think of it like a blob. and that's where the doctor draws what they need to do. Yeah.
For any patient listening, so when you draw these blobs, you said you get lots of slices of the patient. So how many slices would it be for an area, let's say like the prostate? And then would you have to go through every single slice to draw on the organs?
For something like a prostate scan, somewhere in the region of probably 120 to 160 slices through someone. This will vary through different scanners, hospitals, protocols, etc. But generally speaking, somewhere between every 2 or 3 millimeters through someone, there's a picture taken. And so, yes, we're drawing on all of those. Probably not for all that 160, though. It's we aim for, I'd say, within about a 5 centimeter radius of what we're we're anticipating we're going to be treating. So with something like the prostate, we can see where we are, five up, five below, roughly speaking. And it is quite time consuming, but there's tools now to help us make that a little bit quicker. It's also quite therapeutic though. You kind of just, if you know what you're looking at, it's, yeah.
When it comes back to you then, Sue, and you start to do the planning, so to speak, when you start doing that, how do you determine how much dose is going to go where and then kind of alter it so that patients don't get too many side effects to the normal tissue?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It's all very, very protocol driven, and there's very strict criteria for everything, really. It's almost like having recipes or something along those lines. But every different bit of the body has different tolerances for how much radiation it can take before something bad happens. And there's different scales for those events. So lots of people do experience side effects during radiotherapy. Some of them are short term. Some of them can happen later down the line. But when we're doing the planning, we're trying to limit all of that as much as possible. But it's a bit of a sliding scale, because right at the very top of that list, you've got things that would be life-altering, sort of like the spinal cord is one that sort of we're always very conscious of, because of how it works. If you go above its tolerance for radiotherapy, you can stop it working, which means paralysis. So there's nothing you can do about that. So I don't want to scare anybody listening. We work to very, very strict protocols to make sure that we're monitoring that dose all the time. And that's one of our things. We call it a dose limiting structure, to sort of think about how we're putting the dose in. But then some of the other organs that we talk about, the skin is a prime example. Lots of people do get skin reactions with radiotherapy. Normally it's during, after, but then it starts to heal up again. That's one of the marvels of the human body, is when everything is working, the normal body cells can recover, and you know, your skin regenerates, etc. Happens with your bowel as well. So you do get upset bowels, but again, they do recover. But whereas the cancer cells, they don't have that recovery process. So if we get them and kill them off, they don't recover. So the side effects happen, but then yeah, they sort of, everything hopefully heals up again. And as to how we sort of try and limit side effects, some of it comes with experience of, like I said before, you sort of get used to seeing the same sorts of types of cases. I plan quite a lot of head and neck treatments. This week I was planning one and it was tricky, and I was looking at it and just thinking, I wonder how far I can push things so that I can spare this person's parotid glands, because they're so important for the salivary function. And even just like a corner of the oral cavity, so the mouth. I'm particularly sensitive to everything dental these days. I've had a lot of procedures done recently, but I've a newfound appreciation for, even if you just have one small area that isn't sore to actually eat your food, it makes such a difference. So yeah, every corner counts. That's my new thing for this year.
Do you know what's lovely to hear, Sue, when you're talking, is that you don't kind of, you're referring the entire time to the patient, and it's not just I'm reviewing a CT scan and planning based on that CT scan. It's like you can actually visualize the patient. Is that something that actually goes through your head as you are planning?
I think so, yeah. And I think my background as a therapeutic radiographer is what informs that process, because I have spent time with patients like this and seeing what happens to them on treatment. And also just the practicalities of delivering the treatment as well. So sometimes we treat people in breath hold, and sometimes some of the beams that I want to put together, I'm just there thinking, this is going to take forever. They can't hold their breath for this long. So I'll purposely split it in two so that the patient knows they've got a little break that's coming. I know that the machine will cut out automatically, etc. anyway, but in my head, I'm thinking, if that were me, psychologically, I'd feel a bit better if I could do it in one, and then I'd have a break, and then I could do another one. perfect. I don't know if it actually means anything, but it makes me feel a bit better when I'm doing stuff like that. But when I said before as well about how in treatment planning you have people with different backgrounds, I think my perspective is certainly one perspective, but I find that it works best if I'm paired with someone who is more technically focused as well, because they kind of ground me back in the reality of what the machines could actually do and what's, you know, most, yeah, the smartest way to do something. And we collaborate and sort of think, yeah, and they're like, yeah, but for the patient this will work better, or the machine needs to get around this way, and we kind of work together and bring two different sides to things. Yeah,
it's really nice to hear how personalized it is. I think it's something that we always try and get across through RadChat, is every radiotherapy plan is so personalized, it's so different. I was just texting Joe saying that I've just taken me back to when I was a student in dosimetry. I absolutely loved it. It's just so much fun and so much knowledge, and actually then bringing that back onto the treatment floor was really interesting, understanding why someone has planned something in a specific way. So yeah, it's just really nice.
Yeah, and working at Genesis, we have a really close sort of team, like with the radiographers, and you know, I'll go and sit with them sometimes and watch them actually deliver these plans, so that I don't lose sight of that, because and the challenges they have with some of these like longer treatments and things, and just making sure that what we're doing is practical and reasonable, and makes sense for the patient at the end of the day, because yeah, it's it is all very complicated. And that's when you're saying about everything being so personalised, I think that's probably one of the more challenging aspects of planning, is, you know, you can have an idea of how you do these things normally, but every single person is different, and we can have all the tools in the world, but ultimately, yeah, we're all different outside, we're all different inside, and when it comes to doing these treatment plans, you just have to think about the individual person and what you're looking at. But also what you don't see. So I'll always read through people's histories, we call them. You know, we get some indications of whether they've got any other issues going on. So the prostate cancer example, if someone's got irritable bowel syndrome, they might be more likely to experience some of the bowel side effects. So you sort of start thinking, it's even more important, isn't it, that I try and limit that as much as possible, and those kind of things. And I'm an asthmatic as well, so I sort of think, you know, if people have, if their lungs are in the radiotherapy field, they've already got lung problems, we don't need more, and those different things that play into it. And yeah, I can imagine for patients, between when they come for their CT scan and then when they start their radiotherapy treatment, it's almost like this limbo period, because it just goes quiet, like for them, and it's probably quite frustrating, because they feel like they're getting going, but then they're not. If there's any patients listening, there's literally someone who's obsessed with you, like behind the scenes, and just trying to make things as good as they can for you. Because really, we only get one shot of doing things perfectly for each patient. So it is really important that we get it right first time.
So something that we advocate for patients to do when they go for radiotherapy is to talk to the therapeutic radiographers about their plan. Why do you think that's so important, that patients get an opportunity, if they want to kind of talk with the radiographers, or if you're on set, a dosimetrist, about their plan?
I think it just, so many people understand things more when they see them, and without visualizing any of this stuff, they're just going into a treatment room and just seeing a machine whirring around them and making a lot of noises, and you just have this blind faith that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. But it's, yeah, so it's, I'd be the same, like I'd like to see things and know what's going on, and it just helps really to understand what we're asking them to do. I've spoken quite a bit about prostate patients, because we ask them to do quite a lot of things. We ask them to fill their bladders up and make sure that they've gone to the toilet earlier in the day. And it can be a bit like, but why? Unless you show them the pictures and you say, this is why. Here you go. Here's your bladder. It's moving everything out the way like we want it to. And it's so powerful because, yeah, the people just, it clicks then. And it's a lot easier to, I think, go through these processes if you understand more about what's going on behind the scenes.
Sue, when we think about late effects for patients, it's something that we also get asked about a lot, and Joe and I are quite passionate about. From a dosimetry plan, I mean, depending on when the plan was completed, etc., is there a way of maybe looking ahead to the future and saying, actually, this could be an area of problem for patients in the future?
I think it's hard to know beyond those tolerances that we already have. And I guess if we're in the ballpark of where some of these late effects might occur, the doctors ultimately are the ones who are approving these plans and, you know, saying that they that's the plan they want to give for the patient, and we give them all of these statistics as well. So if there's any risk of any of these late effects occurring, normally they've gone through things with the patients and made them aware of these possibilities down the line. I think it's difficult because I feel like we're always in this, like, it's almost like a carousel of, yeah, whatever we do today, we don't know for another 20 years how that's actually going to impact everyone. But then in 20 years' time, things will be different again. So it's always like an ever-changing landscape, and we're trying to learn, but also trying to adapt to the new things as we go. So maybe we've already learned. It's, yeah, constantly going around in circles in that way.
When you say keep learning, with the tolerance doses, how often does the data set get checked or updated?
So for us at Genesis, I think it's really quite, it's amazing to be part of because of how our network works, because we've got sites all across of England. The protocols are also from all those different places, so it's we have our own, but we work with doctors who have local protocols, etc., as well. So we've almost got this passive peer review going on the whole time we're working, because if anything changes in one part of the country, you pick it up and you're like, oh, that's different to what that was. So what are we gonna talk about this? And we have a lot of quality assurance processes, escalations where these things all do get discussed at sort of high level with doctors, etc. I've spoken a little bit about stereotactic radiotherapy. That's come to mind because that's one area where the protocols are fairly national. There's like these UK consensus statements about what doses we can give to what. So there was an iteration in 2019, and there was another one in 2022. So that's kind of the latest one at the moment, as far as I know. We're quite early in 24, so hopefully there's nothing come out that I'm not aware of yet.
So how do patients access their radiotherapy plan or information long after they've actually finished treatment? Because what's going through my head is just about kind of late effects. If someone were to present, I don't know, 8 years down the line to their GP, would they have access to their radiotherapy treatment plan? And if not, where could they access that from?
So when we make treatment plans, there's kind of two parts to it. So we say there's the computery part. It's DICOM. It's these, you know, the actual digital files that can only really be read by imaging software, radiotherapy software, and that's where the actual true dose files live. And actually, when anyone, it's as you say, Joe, some patients go, you know, they'll have lived somewhere else, and then later they're having radiotherapy again down the line, and those are the files that get shared between hospitals so that we can account for previous radiotherapy. But what you're talking about in terms of clinics, we also at Genesis we create like it's a PDF document really, that can be printed off electronically, or you know, it's on our systems as this PDF document. That's the summary of the radiotherapy plan, and at the beginning of that we always put on all of those organ at risk doses. So those are the things that we've highlighted as we've measured this plan against. These are the doses that this person's spinal cord or lungs are getting, and it's at the front of that document. So for a GP, I think I don't know that they would necessarily be able to correlate that because they're probably not familiar with those protocols. But certainly for a therapeutic radiographer-led late effects clinic, looking at that document, you'll get the doses and be like, oh, okay, so that lung dose was such and such for this case, and probably be able to make sense of it in such a way that would help inform those clinics, yeah.
And this is why therapeutic radiographers are critical in late effects.
Yeah.
Another reason why we're awesome at what we do, and we should be considered to be part of everything, just taking over the NHS.
Yeah.
Are you involved in any research at the moment, Sue?
So last year I finished my master's. It was technically last year. It was like December 22, so we'll call it last year. And that was a long time coming. I was really, really proud to get it over the line, actually. I think if I had to pick an area that I was most interested in looking into is how people like myself, therapeutic radiographers, work in dosimetry, what more can we do, what more can we explore. So for my master's I basically contoured a whole lot of prostates and compared my contours with the original volumes that were used for planning. Came out pretty good, but it's not a view to sort of replacing anything that the doctors do at all. It's for me, you know, you have to walk before you can run. And if you're looking at anything to do with service improvement, you have to baseline where you're at. And that was kind of where I was getting at with that piece of work, and sort of demonstrating that it's potentially viable for us to do these sorts of things. Because going forwards, and already, and I know some of the guests you've had on talking about MR-Linac, you've got therapeutic radiographers who are doing that work day to day for adaptive radiotherapies. And it's sort of about bridging that gap, really. And so they're doing that on MR-Linac. I don't work on MR-Linac planning. I work on conventional, but for me, I'm really wanting to see what we can do to bring the best of radiotherapy to those patients as well. So yeah, it's a bit of a different speed, but, yeah, that's kind of what I was looking at exploring. And that's, if I was going to look at a few more things, they'd be down that line as well.
How do you keep up to date, Sue? Because even therapeutic radiographers now are seeing massive changes in radiotherapy technique and delivery. How do you as a dosimetrist keep up with all those technological advancements? And even within your field, there are masses of adaptations, the introduction of AI. You know, how do you keep up?
Well, there's this really good podcast called Rad Chat, which is the world's first therapeutic radiographer-led podcast. I'm joking, but I'm also not, because I didn't talk about it so much. But as part of my sort of career pathway, I also did work in IT within Genesis for a short time. Well, 2.5 years, not that short. But I was sort of working with bringing in new systems and software and commissioning and training for both staff and doctors and all of that stuff. And then I came back into dosimetry. I missed the clinical side of life, and it's been really good coming back, because I've had these opportunities to develop more. But in doing that, I think that's around the time that really I discovered what you guys were doing here. And that really did help me get back into that mindset as well. Not just technological advancements and all of those things that are going on in the world, but from the patient side of things, and how their experiences might be changing as well. So, yeah, I do bring that, as I say, forward into my dosimetry. But for the rest of it, it's a bit of a whirlwind, because there's so much changing in radiotherapy all the time. But for us, you know, I just focus on the patients that we're planning at the moment, and trying to keep up to speed with all the, the stereotactic work and all the new things that the doctors are wanting to do. A lot of reading.
I love that you mentioned Rad Chat, because I do remember, Sue, that we started the podcast, and quite early on you were like, you reached out to us, and obviously I'd known you for years and you were an excellent student, so I definitely remembered you. And you said something to me and I will never forget it, because it literally made me cry, but also made me think, oh yeah, this is worth pursuing. But you always said you made me fall back in love with radiotherapy. And I was just like, wow, that's incredible. And it is, it's, you know, we are a massive community and it's amazing that we can kind of learn with, from and about each other for our patients. And I think, you know, when we've had conversations, it's learning from the patients that inspires us to want to do better, do more, and you know, develop in that way. So thank you for that comment. It kept us going.
Now look at you.
Do you have close links with industry? Because I'm just thinking, for software manufacturers, is that something that you kind of liaise quite closely with, so that you can keep abreast of changes and developments?
I'd say for me personally, not so much anymore. But when I was in our clinical IT team, certainly more so, because and it wasn't just in the radiotherapy side. So GenesisCare has diagnostics and chemotherapy, etc., as well. So there's all of that across all of those disciplines. And I did cross over into some of the diagnostic space with that. So there were some of the providers there that we were working with quite closely. And yeah, in that role, certainly I did. But yeah, not so much now. But if I still see any of those people out and about, I'll always go and say hello.
So what's one thing you wish people knew about a dosimetrist role? Just thinking of all the outreach work and things like that that people get involved with. And obviously, as Joe has mentioned before, and as we know, the workforce is depleting a little bit for radiotherapy. How do you inspire more people to do what you do?
So there's two answers to that. And the first one that came to mind is probably not that inspiring. But in the spirit of being transparent and honest, it involves a lot of sitting down behind a computer screen, and that is it's a genuine struggle at times, because it's not good for us to be constantly sat down. So you know, you have to bed in constant, like making sure you're having plenty of breaks and things like that. So just bear that in mind. But that said, if you are so inclined, it is incredibly rewarding, and you like there's days where I feel like I've had a genuine impact on someone's cancer care pathway, and you feel like you've had, yeah, like this positive impact, and because I was there doing what I do, it meant this happened. And it's not just me, it could, you know, any of my colleagues, but you know that you fulfilled your part in the chain to make things happen for that person. There was a case recently where we, so something we do at Genesis is that we do try and deliver sort of the advanced techniques for our patients. So I'll talk about VMAT, and that probably won't mean much to a lot of people, but it's a more conformal approach to radiotherapy. And we try and do that for palliative patients wherever we can as well. I still don't really like the word palliative, because it's changed a lot in definition. I'm going on a massive tangent now, but for people where they're having radiotherapy for control of symptoms or pain or you know, those kinds of things, and sometimes the quickest treatment isn't always the most conformal, should we say. But at Genesis, we do try and combine the two as much as we can. So we had a case recently where someone had symptomatic lung cancer, and it was turned around in a day with this conformal VMAT treatment. So it's quite special to be a part of, because you know that person's only had to make that trip once. They're not feeling well. They don't want to have to be coming backwards and forwards. And they come in for their scan, get all the planning done. It's not me who lines up all the ducks in the row. That's my boss. She's brilliant. But it all works. And then at the end of the day, the patient has their treatment and they're done. They can relax and then hopefully start feeling better quite quickly. So I think, Yeah, it's true of many professions, but for me as a dosimetrist, I feel like that's the most rewarding thing, is like you've been able to use your experience, your knowledge, your skills, and it's all come together for you to be able to make a difference to someone's life at a difficult time. So, you know, I don't think it gets much better than that, does it? Having a purpose at work, it's nice.
So if you could help in influence practice, so I don't know, if you could help advise any therapeutic radiographers working in pre-treatment, is there anything that you wish they would do that would make your life as a dosimetrist easier or better, other than bringing you biscuits at break time or sharing the chocolates?
You stole my answer. That's that's what I was going to say. No, I don't want biscuits. Yeah, best off not. I think something, one of the areas where things are more challenging these days is in some of these cases where we're treating symptomatic disease for people with advanced cancer, because it can be literally anywhere in the body. And I think, and we're actually implementing this in Genesis, is where we almost have a little catch up before they're scanning patients, so we can all touch base to make sure that we are we're all doing things that we all think is best for the patient and what we need from our respective roles. So we'll have conversations about, and I'll say things like, if you can, it'd be good to get their arms up because it means I can use these beams a bit easier, but if not, don't worry, one arm up will do. We can just go around the one side, that sort of thing. And they'll say, can we use a mattress? And I'm like, of course you can use a mattress. So those sorts of things, it all sounds really simple, but it makes such a difference to the whole impact, really. And I think communication then is probably the one word answer to that question, isn't it? It's just about, yeah, doing it early and getting it right at the time.
Oh, perfect answer. So we're coming towards the end of the podcast episode. It all flies by too quickly. If you have any top tips for any of the listeners, whether it be patients, students, oncology professionals, what would you say?
So for anybody who like me, once upon a time was a therapeutic rad wanting to get involved in dosimetry, I would say, don't wait to be invited. Yeah, we're all everywhere. Everyone's so busy and we do want to share our knowledge, but you have to step forward, walk in the door, and do a bit of reading for yourself. Make sure it's something that you are definitely wanting to get into. But just get in their faces really when you can, and really show willing and be proactive with it. Because, yeah, it's one of those things, I think, where you just have to keep being a little bit incessant with it and dog with a bone, which is what I was. So, yeah, that's my tip for fellow dosim aspiring people. But for the patients, the take home really is, like I said before, in that limbo period where you're just waiting for your plan and to start your treatment. And especially if for some reason you get that phone call where someone says, I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to delay your start by a couple of days. Just know that it's for the very, very best reasons of just making sure that your radiotherapy treatment is absolutely the best treatment that it can be for you, because they're worrying about making sure they give your treatment the absolute best dose they can, whilst avoiding all the other important bits and making sure your side effects are as low as they possibly can be. So I know that's a really difficult time, and you know, the dosimetrist isn't probably going to be picking up the phone to try and explain this to you. So that's kind of the message for patients, I think. And if you are interested, like Joe says, to see a bit about what your plan is all about, yeah, hassle your radiographers or whoever you might encounter on the way and ask if they might talk to you.
Thank you so much, Sue. And I think, do you need to suggest to your boss that they invest in standing desks? Do you think that that is something legitimately that might help you in your sedentary lifestyle as a dosimetrist?
I'm actually thinking maybe a walking pad as
Oh
well, you know, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Yes.
It's hard to get the steps in.
I've just invested. Best thing ever. I love it. I love
Oh, okay.
now standing and walking. I think I look slightly weird in meetings because my head's bobbing because I'm walking, but I'm a jigger anyway. So anyone who's ever had to sit next to me in a meeting, I apologize because I'm always jigging my legs. So it's probably good for someone restless like me. Oh, thank you so much, Sue, for finally coming on Rad Chat. We're absolutely delighted to have you. So thank you all for listening to Rad Chat. Your hosts today have been myself, Jo McNamara, and Numb and Joel Canderson. If you're utilizing this podcast for CPD purposes, consider the reflective questions posted along with links to resources and literature that we've discussed. To receive your accredited CPD certificate, please complete the Google form linked with the podcast. We would like to thank GenesisCare for this paid collaboration. Make sure you go and check out www.genesiscare.com/UK to check out their services, and make sure to check out all the other wonderful social media posts accompanying this series. Our next guest to feature will be Dr. Elliot Sims, who will be discussing clinical oncology.